Energy current fluctuations in one dimensional systems in ring geometry. So, this work is done with KG Saito from the University and Anjan Goyal from a student who is now in the Max Planck Institute. A lot of the ideas in this paper came from England, and though he's not an author of the paper that we wrote on this, but a lot of our ideas really came from him. So, let me give the outline of the talk. So I'll talk about so basically first I will give some introduction to about what one means by systems with animals as heat transport, and then what I'll be using in this talk is results from fluctuating hydrodynamics of anhydrous gels, and so again I'll give some basic introduction, and I'll show some numerical results that we recently did to test the predictions of fluctuating hydrodynamics. And then the main topic of the talk is results on energy current fluctuations, and basically looking at large deviations of for current fluctuations. And I will talk about numerical results for two one-dimensional systems. One is something called an alternating mass hard particle. So basically, just particles on a ring, point particles on a ring whose masses are alternately m1, m2, m1, m2, and so on. And they just move ballistically and collide, conserving energy and momentum. So that's the alternating mass hard particle gas. The other model is a stochastic model. It's a harmonic chain, so it has a Hamiltonian dynamics. But on top of that, it has a noise in the system, which is a noise which conserves both total momentum and energy. Okay, so these are the two models, and the reason I discussed these two models is that they are supposed to belong to two different university classes, and we want to look at how current fluctuations in these two models look like. And then we'll try to understand these numerical results using fluctuating hydrodynamic theory. So if I have time, we'll also talk about also understanding these results through Lady Walk dynamics. So there's a recent paper in the field. Okay, so let me first talk about what exactly is anomalous heat transport. So this is the Fourier's law of heat conduction, which says if I take a solid like this and put two different temperatures, then I heat current flowing through the system, and I can also measure the temperature everywhere. So there's a temperature gradient, and the current is expected to be proportional to the temperature gradient. So the thermal proportionality constant is the thermal conductivity of the material, and it's supposed to be a property of a material independent of how big or how small the system is. Now Fourier's law basically implies that heat kind of spreads diffusively, so it implies the diffusion equation for temperature profiling. Okay, so there was this very nice article by Bonetto, Lebowitz, and Gilberry in 2000. Which posed this problem that can one derive this law starting from purely Hamiltonian dynamics. So this paper was called Fourier's Law Challenge for Theorists, and in this paper they offered a bottle of wine to anyone who solves this problem. So it's still not, I think, it's not completely solved. So what happens actually, so the first thing one would try to understand is one-dimensional systems, and there what you find is that Fourier's Law is actually not true. And you find this problem of anomalous heat transport. So what you find is that in one-dimensional systems with momentum conservation, the thermal conductivity is actually not independent of system size. It diverges with increasing system sizes, and the divergence is typically as a power law, which looks like this. So kappa is not an intrinsic material property, and Fourier's law is not valid. Okay, so how do you look for violations of Fourier's law? So in a system with a specified Hamiltonian dynamics, so what you do is let's say you take your system, a set of particles moving on the line with some Hamiltonian, which written here, usually one studies nearest neighbor interactions. So there's some potential interaction between these particles, and then there's a kinetic energy, and then they just evolve with Hamiltonian dynamics. The particles at the ends interact with these reservoirs, in some way like the various based model interactions with reservoirs. And then you, what one of the things you could do is just let the system reach a steady state. This is at a different temperature, so it reaches a non-equilibrium steady state where there is a current flowing through the system. You can measure the temperature anywhere and you can measure the current going through the system. And one of the things you look for is, for example, Fourier's law implies that the current should scale with system size as 1 over n. Okay, is this true or not? So that's the first thing you could, one of the things you could check. And so if this is true, then the conductivity is given by J times L divided by delta T. And Fourier's law requires kappa to be independent of L. And what you find if you do such an experiment is that actually it diverges as you increase the system size.
So an example would be, I could put the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam Hamiltonian.
So a lot of simulations are done with this Fermi-Pasta-Ulam chain. So this is the kinetic energy of M particles, and this is the interaction potential. Q's are the potential of the particles, and it's just nearest neighbor interactions, and you have a quadratic term, so that if you adjust this, it would be a harmonic chain, and then you put non-linearities to bring the interactions between the phonons. Okay, so if you do an experiment, like numerical experiment, what you find is that so at the two respects, the temperature is 2 and 1, and if you measure the temperature inside, you get some profile like this. In fact, if you make the temperature difference very small, you always get this sort of nonlinear profile. So that's one actually signature of an inverse transport. You never get a linear temperature profile as you expect in diffusive systems. Here, what I'm showing is the conductivity, which is the current times the system size for systems of different sizes, okay, versus systems of. And what you find that this conductivity does not saturate with system size, it keeps increasing. And this is some power, this is some simulation which gives a result close to 10 to the power 1/3.
How do you measure the heat current?
So what we do is, so look, you can measure, you can define energy density at each, let's say, site, and then you write a continuity equation. So on a lattice, you write something like, if you just write this, you find that this is the form. Jn minus 1. So you just write a continuity equation for the energy density and that defines the current. So the current is some function of the phase space variables and you just measure the time average in the simulation.
That's the conductivity measured where?
This is like in steady state, the current is the same anywhere, like it's everywhere is the same. So you can just,
this is 1D, okay.
You can just measure it anywhere, it's the same, and then you just multiply by the system size and divide by the temperature difference. Okay, so you find this diverging conductivity. And so this seems to be not just true for the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. I mean, any one-dimensional system with momentum conservation shows this kind of anomalous behavior. So some other ways you could look at anomalous transport is like you could put a static system in equilibrium and put a heat pulse, okay, and see how it spreads. So if it was a diffusive system, it would spread like a Gaussian, but here you find that it spreads like a Levy distribution. Other things you could do is like you could start with a step profile for the temperature and see how it evolves. For an anomalous system, you find that it's it has this sort of spreading where you find this sort of a scaling of this temperature profile at different times. And there are some certain other features like you find that there's a kind of shock somewhere here. So this is just a temperature profile. You start with the at t equal to 0 step thing and then you see how it evolves in time. So for a diffusive system, you get something like this. It's just an error function. So these are some various ways you could look for anomalous transport. The other thing you could do is, so far I've told you about non-equilibrium studies. You could also look at a system in equilibrium and then look at things like current-current correlations. Okay, so if we look at, so there's this linear response formula, the Green-Cooper formula, which relates conductivity to equilibrium current-current correlations. And if you, so why does this diverge? The reason is that this current-current correlations decay very slowly with time. Okay, so so this is another thing you could check, and you indeed find that they decay kind of very slowly with time, and that leads to diverging conductivities. And finally, you can look at things like correlations of fluctuations in equilibrium. Okay, so like if I look at if I have some fluctuation in energy density at some point, how does that decay with time? Okay, so this sort of fluctuations, I mean, this also should have information on anomalous transport. And most of the analytic approaches that trying to understand anomalous transport are based on this equilibrium data. Okay, so some open questions and theoretical approaches are, I mean, so one question is still not completely clear that this is always true that one systems have anomalous transport. I mean, though there, it seems really, when there are the arguments which theoretical approaches which suggest this is indeed true, but it's not completely settled. I mean, it's not a theorem yet. Then the question of establishing university classes and computing this exponent alpha. And then one could ask questions like, if the system is anomalous, then what replaces the diffusion equation? So there's some attempts by in terms of like, so the basic point is that the heat carriers are not doing a random walk, and they're actually doing a Levy walk. So and that way one can understand many of the results. And there's another sort of approach is using the fractional diffusion equation, which is kind of closely related. And then finally, there's the theory of understanding anomalous transport is fluctuating hydrodynamic theory. So there was some initial work by Anuttam Narayan and Sriram Ramaswamy, and then Henk van der Meulen. And then recently, Herbert has made some very detailed predictions about from fluctuating hydrodynamic theory. Okay, so which I'll talk, maybe describe a bit, because that's something I'll use in this work. So what is so what are the basics of fluctuating hydrodynamics to describe this kind of one-dimensional and harmonic change? So basically, one first identifies what are the conserved quantities in the system. So for the Fermi-Pascal-Hilbert chain, for example, the conserved quantities are basically, if I look at these are the particle coordinates. If I look at separation between two particles, then I can think of that as a conserved quantity. So that's all. I mean, basically, like the density. But instead of density, I can use, it turns out that it's more useful to look at this variable. So this is the interparticle distance. And of course, momentum and energy are the other conserved quantities. So these are, one expects that these are the only conserved quantities. And then I can write sort of continuity equations for these three conserved quantities. So, I mean, so this is a lattice model, and here x really means the lattice side. Okay? So I'm writing it in a continuous form, but l here, x here really means, and x is like a lattice variable. Okay, so so once I have this continuity equations, then what one does is one looks at the system in equilibrium and considers fluctuations around the equilibrium values. Okay. So in equilibrium, I have some average extension, the average momentum is zero, and there is some average energy density. And I look at fluctuations, and let's say u1, u2, u3 are the fluctuations at each point and at a given time of these three conserved fields. Okay, so then what I do is I have these three, so the currents corresponding to these three conserved quantities are actually the current corresponding to r is just the momentum, and then p is the pressure in the system. And this is just momentum times pressure. Okay. So these are the three currents. So then what I do is I expand these currents around their equilibrium values and keep up to second order terms in the nonlinearity. Okay. So this is now I'm rewriting this conservation laws. But now so I expand in linear order in the fields U, and then quadratic in the fields U. And then I add some extra terms which are like coefficient and noise. So that's so these are like the these are the describe the dynamics at which takes the system to local equilibrium at small scales. Okay, so these are the basically hydrodynamic complete hydrodynamic equations. And in this equation, this A and G, so these are some matrices, and I have written in matrix notation. So these matrices are actually completely known given the Hamiltonian of the model. Okay, so if I tell you what the potential is, then one can actually compute completely these matrices A and G. Okay, and then there is this C matrix and B, this satisfy a fluctuation dissipation relation that's just put in by hand, and I don't know how what these are from the microscopics.
So what's the origin of this CU term?
Okay, so this I guess if you like really do a derivation starting from complete microscopics, this comes at so that when you write the current, it has a deterministic part which is this, but then there is also this term just comes naturally. The dissipative part. And I don't know what a good way to say it is. Maybe there are all these other non-conserved fields, and they are basically helping the system to equilibrate at a local scale and give rise to dissipation. Okay, so this is basically 1D Navier-Stokes equation, but written in a slightly different way than one usually sees there. Okay, so now the next step in this hydrodynamics theory is to consider the ignore the nonlinear term. There is this linear equation, and then just look at what are the normal modes of the system. Okay, so there are three fields, and corresponding to that, I can find three normal modes. And what one finds that there are two propagating sound modes and one heat mode. Okay, so there are two sound modes which go in the opposite direction, and then there's a heat mode which is its at origin. Okay, so these modes I'll call them phi plus minus, the two sound modes, and the heat mode is called phi zero. Okay, so now instead of writing equations for U, I can write equations for these three modes, including the nonlinearity. And then what one finds is that the sound modes to leading order this oppositely sound modes are decoupled from the heat mode and basically satisfy Weissenberger's equation. Okay, and heat mode is not has no like nonlinearity coming from itself, but it's basically the only nonlinearity that comes is from the sound modes. So the okay, so then what one does is one solves this nonlinear hydrodynamic equations using mode coupling approximation, and then one can make detailed predictions for the equilibrium space-time correlations. So this sort of correlation. So these phis are the three fields, the two sound modes and one heat mode, and one can compute all these correlations using this mode coupling equations. So then what one finds is, because I said the sound modes are essentially like two Berger's fields moving in different directions. So the correlations for this are basically given by this KPZ scaling function. And for the heat mode, which has to be solved by taking in the sound modes, one finds that the correlation is given by a Levy distribution.
So in the KPZ context, this phi is just the grad H in terms of height.
Grad H
correlation.
Right, yeah, yes.
How does the three-fifth exponent emerge? I mean, from the
three-fifth?
Yeah, I mean, is there a simple argument to understand?
Okay. I think it just comes from the mode coupling calculation.
Is there a simple argument? I mean,
it's really a computation. You first have to really write down this mode coupling.
So it's an approximation, or it's supposed to be?
No. I mean, at that stage, it's an approximation. I mean, it seems to be the exact result. Okay. That it, you know, the computation really involves the mode coupling, yeah. And that's sort of an approximate equation. And so, you know,
what is the interpretation of height back in the original Fermi-Pasta model?
Yes.
it's
you have to say
I mean, some
okay, velocity, right? Velocity,
so, velocity in some, yeah.
Okay, I would have to think of when one can go back to the fields and write it in terms of the, okay, I would have to think of
density of something?
It's the normal modes, I mean, the phi is a linear combination of the density,
okay,
and
density,
the momentum, yeah, and the energy, so, like, it's not...
Not obvious.
Yeah, so the actual fields are combinations of all the three modes.
Yes.
So it all gets mixed up.
Okay.
So the nice thing in this prediction is that everything is known in terms of the microscopic model. Okay. C is the speed of sound, there's an exact formula, and this scaling parameters lambda S and lambda E, they are also given exactly by the theory. Okay. So if KPZ says this, it's a universal scaling function that appears in the Karpathy-Zeidan equation, and this is just a linear stable distribution with a cut of x equal to c.
But you had this other parameter c, right, in the original Moore-Kapteyn
model? Oh yeah, those things don't appear at all.
They don't appear at all, I see.
Right, yeah. So all these c, d, they don't appear in the long time limit.
I see.
Yeah, so
even in this scaling function?
Yeah.
Even in the scaling function?
Well, it's just like for the KPC. I mean, it's only the ratio of the coefficient which appears, and that's directly related to the steady covariance, and the steady covariance in this model comes directly from the equilibrium. So that's something which we know about. So, I mean, the ratio, of course, you know, is fixed by the model. I mean, you know, each individual coefficient is just a phenomenological.
So even if the two scaling functions are independent of this.
Are independent of the diffusion constant? Okay. The other thing that you can extract from this theory is you can actually compute the equilibrium current and collision, and you get this 1/82 working third, which implies that also from this you can get the expected n to the power 1/3 divergence that you see in the numerical simulations. Okay, so I'll just show you some numerical results where you do direct simulations of the Fermi-Pasquale chain to compute these correlations and see how they compare with the theory. Okay, so basically this chain on a circle, on a ring, and then you average with a large number of initial conditions, and the dynamics is purely Hamiltonian. These are just the parameters in the Fermi-Pasquale model that I wrote. These are the simulations for like 16,000 particles. And other parameters are the temperature, pressure, which also you have to fix in the video. Okay, so in this system, the speed of sound is 1.8 something, and here I show that three correlations. Okay, so the two sound correlations and one heat correlation. So at three different times. Okay, so the red color is the earliest time, and this is the heat mode, and then you see these two sound modes going two opposite directions, and then at long with increasing time, the heat sound modes travel and the heat modes spreads in some way. And these peaks are exactly given by the speed of sound into time. Okay, then you take the sound modes and you move them to the origin by doing the shift, and then try to scale them using this KPZ scaling. And you really find that you get very good collapse of the data. And I also plot the KPZ function, which does a really good job in this case. So here, I also show the scaling parameters, the comparison between theory and the simulations, and it's pretty good. And this is a heat mode. This is an extremely nicely described by this Levy stable distribution.
So it's stationary KPZ, right? It's a stationary KPZ.
Okay, so this is another simulation. Okay, so this I showed one result where everything works extremely well. This is another simulation at slightly lower temperature.
The temperature, where you put the temperature in the...
Temperature, you initially prepare the system in equilibrium at some temperature and pressure.
Okay.
That's the, it's just the equilibrium temperature.
So you choose a profile at the given, with velocity at, from the equilibrium and then let go.
Right, yeah, you just prepare the system in the canonical ensemble. You just prepare the system in equilibrium ensemble.
Mm-hmm. And then let it evolve, isolate.
Sorry?
And then it's isolated.
You just initially it's preparing a equilibrium, so the, it's preparing a... Okay, so there's a temperature and pressure, and that's the distribution at time zero. Okay, so I'll show another data at a lower temperature, where again you find that here the speed of sound is slightly less, so things are separating, so there's still some overlap between all these different modes. And in this case, if you see, if you do the scaling still works very well, but the feed to the KPC function is not so great, and so this one it still is very good. But this scaling parameters are kind of off. So it is just to show that it doesn't always work extremely well. So there are some, I mean, one has to wait for long enough times and then it should be fine.
Okay, next question. Is it possible in this system to explore other initial conditions than stationary? Like flat or torque?
Other initial conditions which...
Yeah, I mean, this is stationary, right?
Yeah.
And you explore other.
So well, I mean, you know, I mean, at least belief, I mean, the dynamics is definitely chaotic, so presumably, you know, mm-hmm. like liquid measures are the only ones which really have the density. I mean, all the other stationary measures will be very simple. So it's not very clear what other initial stationary distribution will
be. Well, not stationary, initial condition, which would not be stationary, but which not allowed to probe.
You mean I mean that hasn't been explored.
Okay, so this is a summary of the results on fluctuating high domains. So, so one thing I didn't say is that one finds from it basically two university classes based on the particle potential VR and the equilibrium parameters. Okay, so and so this is basically this nonlinear matrix G basically has the information on this whether which university class it belongs to. So class 1 is sound mode show KPC scaling and the heat mode is Levy 5/3. And class 2 is sound modes are diffusive and heat mode is Levy 3.5. And maybe there's a class 3 where both the sound and heat modes are Levy golden. So it's not still explored. The numerics shows that the scalings are usually quite good. Okay, and so it's one of the good, I mean, I think it's right now the best description of anomalous energy transport in 1D systems. Okay, so now let's come to the other part of the talk where I basically look at fluctuations of the heat flux. Okay, so.
Excuse me, can I just. Yeah. So, how big is the system? When you have it,
this
is
like
this one, the other one. The
like we looked at 16,000 parts. That's the largest size we saw. 16,000.
How you deal with the reservoirs?
So all the simulations are on the ring. There are no reservoirs. The equilibrium simulation. I mean, like equilibrium. It's completely isolated Hamiltonian dynamics. Okay, so this is the question. I mean, you have a ring, and let's say you have these particles, and so this problem was first studied by these people, Gerrit and Gretchenfeld. And what they looked at is this alternate mass hard particle gas. Okay, so this is another system very well studied in this anomalous literature, transport literature, because so here the there's no potential except there are point particles which collide. With momentum and energy conservation, and their masses are different. Okay, so if you take equal mass, then it's a trivial model. So you need to make this alternate mass model. Okay, so this is a system with very good ergodic properties and so on. And what they did is prepare the system in equilibrium at a given pressure and temperature, and then take a cast somewhere and look at what is the total energy going to this point in a given time term. Okay, so the if you know the current density, and so it's integrated over some time tau, that's the integrated current. Or I can look at, I can average this over the entire system and look at this quantity Q. Okay? And this Q and Q, small q and capital Q are expected to have the same statistics. Okay, so what one is interested in this paper was looking at the statistics of Q or Q for large tau, and in particular looking at large deviations. Okay? So you take a system of fixed length and look at large tau. Okay? So things are really, so what we expect is that this has this the large deviation form probability distribution of this current, integrated current should have this large deviation form. And in this paper they looked at basically these cumulants. So all these cumulants grow linearly with time, and interested in understanding this the behavior of this object, okay, as if for different system sizes.
Is there any temperature here?
Yeah, so this is again, this is a system prepared in equilibrium at given pressure and temperature. It's a completely equilibrium system. So average current is zero. So in fact, only the even cumulants are non-zero in this. Okay, so the what are the results of this paper? Okay, so first of all, this is system is a system with anomalous transport, and it is the same university class as FQ. You get this divergence. So I mean, even cumulants of the current grow linearly with time, and you look at this quantity. Okay, and what they found is that the second cumulant decays with system size as 1 by h to the power half, and the fourth cumulant grows as h to the power half. Okay, so if you take a diffusive system, then it's kind of easy to show that the second cumulant should go as 1 by L, and it's known that all higher cumulants go as 1 by L square. Okay, so it's completely different from a diffusive system, system with anomalous transport. Okay, so I should just mention that there's a paper on a related question by Mendel and Swan, where they look at where they actually look at an infinite system and look at the current statistics at a given point, and so they make some computation with this Bake lines distribution, and but this is a different study where you look at a finite system and look at infinite times. Okay, so. So we do simulations of two systems to look at this. So one is this hard particle gas, and another system which actually belongs to this other university class I mentioned is this harmonic chain with energy momentum conserving noise. Okay, so and then I talk about this theory based on fluctuating hydrodynamics. Okay, so let me first actually start with this. What is the prediction from this theory about this current fluctuations? So first of all, in fluctuating hydrodynamics, we recall that there are these two sound modes, phi plus minus, and a heat mode phi naught. So now it turns out if you look at the heat current, so you can express it in terms of the modes, the territory in each modes. And it turns out that it just depends on the sound modes. It does not depend on the heat mode itself. So this is the energy current. And so therefore, from this you can see that the energy current is actually the sum of two counterpropagating Burgers modes currents. Okay, so therefore, the statistics of this current is these are two independent fields. And so if you know the statistics of this, you can immediately write down the statistics of this. So the generating function for this Q is basically a product of the generating functions of this and with a minus sign, because this is going in the other direction. Okay, so now the current generating function for the Burgers field, this is a known thing from paper by David and Leibowitz on the asymmetric simple exclusion process. So where they have an exact result for the Kindred generating function for asset, which is also the same as the Burgers equation. Okay, so therefore, if we take the results from that paper, one can immediately get expression, some predictions for what you expect for the energy current in this model. Okay, and what you find is that even cumulants are, so just using this Derrida-Leibowitz results, the second cumulant is actually 1 by n half, and you know these three factors exactly, and then the fourth cumulant will go as n to the power half, and sixth cumulant goes as n to the power 3 by 2. And one nice thing is that if you take some ratio of these cumulants, you get a number which is independent of all model parameters. So that was the hard particle gas. For the momentum exchange model also you can make you can actually calculate the cumulant generating function exactly. So in this case, I said the two sound modes are diffusive and the heat mode current is just given by it's just the difference of these two sound modes. And because the heat modes are just purely diffusive, so you can just do a completely like a Gaussian calculation to find the large deviation function for these objects. Okay, and so you have some explicit formula, and from this we can compute the cumulants. So in this case, the cumulants are given like this. So the second cumulant in this case is independent of system size. The fourth cumulant goes as n square, and the sixth cumulant is n to the power 4. Okay, so these are very different from the hard particle gas, and in particular, the actually the cumulants become really large. Okay, so. For the hard particle gas, it was n to the power 3 by 2, this is n to the power 4. Okay, so the fluctuations are extremely huge in these systems. Okay, Radha? Okay, so the other sort of very interesting thing is that in this formula you get this Bernoulli numbers, which actually also, so this form is almost identical to what you get in the symmetric exclusion process. Okay? Even though the scalings with n is completely different, but these three factors are actually almost identical to what you get in the symmetric exclusion process, which is of course much a difficult calculation than this one. Okay, so now I'll show you the numerical results. So what we look at is, so in the simulation you look at the current going through a point and take moments and then divide by tau, and then you plot as a function of 1 over tau. So as tau goes to infinity, it goes to a constant value. And here what I show is, like I looked at two quantities, one is the at a given point and the other is averaged over all points. Okay. And as tau goes to infinity, both of them actually go to the same point. There are some arguments you can show that they should actually converge to the same value. And this is what you see in simulations. And then what we do is basically we do some extrapolation to find what is the asymptotic value of this cumulant. Okay, so we do this for the second, fourth, and sixth cumulants, and this is what it looks like as a function of system size. So we so this n to the power minus half and n to the power half were earlier seen in these papers by Appert and Gerstenfeld, and now we also have this sixth cumulant, which as predicted by the theory, it has this correct power n to the power 3 by 2. And for the momentum exchange model, you find that again it agrees with what you get from the theoretical prediction in the power 0, n square, n 4. So one thing is that this cumulants become extremely large. Okay? So here in this plot, I have scaled by factors of 100 and 10 so that it kind of fits nicely. And one can see the powers clearly. But the numbers are really like 10 to the power 8 and so on. Okay? And that's why one can't do simulations with, in this case, one can do simulations with very small systems. For the alternate mass gas, we had results up to like 1,000 particles, but here this is 64 particles. But already one can see the scaling predictions pretty well. Okay, so let me just conclude. So basically, I tried to present a theory for understanding large deviations in energy, equilibrium energy current fluctuations using fluctuating hydrodynamics. And so one sees that there are connections to current fluctuations in KTZ. And for the momentum exchange model, we have an exact solution for the cumulative generating function. And the main results are that the current fluctuations are large in systems with anomalous transport. In the first model, the second equivalent scales as L to the minus half, L to the half, and L to the 3 by 2. In the second model, these are the scalings. And then, comparison with for the diffusive system, these are much smaller, the current fluctuations. Then one finds this universal ratio of cumulants, which is something one we have tried to, so in our simulation phase, we can also kind of see, but we don't get the exact number that's predicted by the theory. And so one of the assumptions that goes into theory is that, here we are looking in a ring geometry, and this heat and sound modes keep traveling right around the rings, right? So they keep particular problem, these modes are interacting all the time. Okay? So, and we have kind of neglected the interactions between these modes. But it's expected to be good because the sound modes are traveling with some finite speed, so maybe the interaction is not so much. Okay? So that's why maybe the theory does work quite well. So one can actually understand this all this scaling in using a Levy-Walk picture, which I won't go into. But so in fact, powers that one gets for these two models can be understood completely from a simple Levy-Walk argument. Thanks.
Questions? Comments?
I have a question about the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam system, because originally what surprised people so much about it was that you had the recurrence.
Exactly.
When I look at your simulations, it looks like there is a recurrence in the sound modes, possibly, but not in the heat mode, and that's decaying away. Is that?
simulation?
Yes, the previous plot that you're looking at.
Sorry?
The previous plot, where you have all the modes.
This one?
Yeah, I can see the sound modes going around the circle.
No, that's not the recurrence.
The original Fermi-Pasta-Ulam simulation was done at very, very, very low temperatures. Mm-hmm. You see here you have temperatures of inertial units like 5 or something, and here this is something like 10 to the minus 4 in the same units. And so, it's very close to the harmonic system actually what they've simulated. And then there was a small system, they had, 16 or 18 particles, and so they saw all these recurrences. But if you look at larger size systems, and if you don't look at such low energies, the system is recurrence.
So what you mean is
totally different.
It's chaotic. Mm-hmm. Is not chaotic. Mm-hmm. Fermi-Pasta-Ulam is not chaotic.
At their low energies, it's not very. It's not chaotic or sort of it's nearly integrable. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but if you go to higher temperatures, to higher energies, then it will be chaotic. Even small system sizes could become chaotic. So he's deeply in the chaotic
system. Yeah, but also it starts from an initial condition and then it's isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah,
isolated dynamics.
Yeah, I think in the Fermi-Pasta theorem there's an energy threshold for this breakdown of ergodicity, and that also decreases as you increase the system size, that goes down.
You're always in the chaotic region.
Do the recurrence times go exponentially in the system size if you go back to the original?
The current as a function of system size?
No, I'm thinking of the original Fermi-Pasta-Ulam regime. The recurrence, is that was that seen because of the small system size?
Yeah. Small system and the low energies.
Do you think there's an energy threshold below which, above which there is, I mean, there is no recurrence? Is that the statement?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Poincaré console.
So yeah, there's Poincaré console, but that's different. That's exponential system size. Yeah.
There's always, even now, there are papers coming out trying to understand this. And so it's not completely settled, but I think that's the present here.
I mean, when you simulate a low energy, you really see that. I mean, I did it. You really see that you recover the initial configuration very quickly.
Other question?
So, when you showed us the hard point gas, what happens if you do a generic Fermi-Pasta-Ulam chain to the large deviations? I mean, did you apply that? I mean,
You know, we have been doing some simulations for the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. I mean, somehow the getting good data is extremely hard in the region. We don't know why, but it's
just. So the alpha gas is numerically much more accessible, so to speak.
Other questions? Comments? So you showed us the theoretical prediction for the ratio of moments, right? Did you show us the numerical values? You showed the scaling.
I did. Oh, you are saying whether I showed the simulation result?
Yes.
No, I didn't.
How they were close?
Okay, I can tell you. I mean, what numbers we get. So this one, like, we get something like four.
Oh, okay.
Which is very good because see these numbers, like these are order numbers like 10 to the 6 and this number is 0.5 or something.
Yeah.
And we combine all these numbers and you get something which is close to this. So that's
quite also easy to get.
That ratio is an irrational number, right? The other ratio showed was irrational.
Oh, yeah,
is there some reasoning there? Or it's just the way it turns out?
Okay, because you have all these things.
I mean, there's nothing deeper to the fact that one was irrational, one was rational.
This one, let's say, and not these ones.
Yeah, here somehow everything is like rational, and there it's irrational, but I don't know why.
And why do you stop at the sixth moment? Why not keep looking at other events?
Theoretically, we have predictions for all the moments.
I see. This is just the first relation.
Right, yeah, but numerically it's very hard.
Well,
yeah,
and it's the relation of this form. You take every other moment and divide by the one in the middle.
Basically, you need to do it in such a way that I don't think it's always that. Things can be
No, it's a factor of 2 to the power.
What about the numerical value for this?
This also is okay. This is like close to 6, and here also we get something like I think quite close. It's around the order is correct.
Is it very
At the end of the first part, you mentioned that if you have lower temperature, then the prediction from hydrodynamic theory is the fluctuation. It's not so good.
One of the things for the theory to work well is that the heat and sound modes should be well separated. Okay, and at low temperatures, because the sound speed is also kind of lower, so therefore the separation is still not complete. And so maybe that's why you need to wait for longer times to get into the asymptotic region. Probably it's just because you need to wait for longer.
Other questions, comments? If not, please thank Abhishek again.